Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland Reporter Telegram, July 10th, 2021. County helps flooded neighborhoods. Crews began pumping water into fracturing tanks this week, by Caitlin Randall. The Midland County Emergency Management Department has started pumping water out of neighborhoods that have flooded after days of heavy rainfall. Crews began pumping water into fracturing tanks this week from Cotton Flat Road and West County Road 120, according to Commissioner Luis Sanchez of Precinct 3. He said they will soon begin pumping water from West County Road 117 near State Highway 349. The county is using the same company to remove the water that the city of Midland uses when the Wadley Barron Park Duck Pond floods, Sanchez said. He said the company has estimated it will take a minimum of 5 days and up to 1 to 2 weeks to remove the standing water on the roads. We're hoping that it'll be done within the next 5 days, but we also have to remember that if it rains again, it's just going to make the problem even worse, Sanchez said. And looking at the weather map, it looks like it's saying that it's going to rain Sunday and Monday. There were 2.67 inches of rain recorded by the National Weather Service on June 27th and 1.27 inches of rain recorded the next day, as well as scattered showers over the next week. Through Friday, rainfall at Midland International Airport had reached about 12.02 inches, which is nearly 5.6 inches higher than the usual rainfall through July 9th. Sanchez said the rainfall created more standing water than usual in the South Draw, which he said often floods because the homes there are built in a low-lying area. "We've actually been working in the last 6 months on a plan to mitigate flooding," he said. "It just so happened that during the time that we're doing this, it actually flooded. So we're taking all of this into consideration as we continue to work on making a better plan to minimize flooding throughout the county, especially in the areas where these draws or where people have decided to build their homes. That plan would look at where water is currently flowing to and where it could be carried to reduce flooding," Sanchez said. Some residents have speculated in local news reports that flooding has been exacerbated by repaving on Cotton Flat Road, when the road was rebuilt higher than it had been previously. "We're looking at every situation and every option, which includes the roads," Sanchez said. "I can't say that the roads are the major factor, but we're thinking that it could be part of it. If you were to divide it up into four pieces, we'd say the roads probably are a tenth of that." In addition to pumping our water, county crews have handed out about 500 sandbags to alleviate flooding in homes and passed out cases of water to residents whose plumbing and wells are unusable. They've also placed portable toilets near Cotton Flat and CR 117, Sanchez said. He said the county is only hoping that the disaster declaration declared by County Judge Terry Johnson this week will allow the area to be declared a FEMA emergency zone, and they'll be able to request more resources. Midland Reporter Telegram, July 10th, 2021. Piat, Cat Trapping Program Paying Dividends, by Stuart Doreen. Much of the discussion when the Midland City Council addressed Animal Services spay-neuter voucher budget last month revolved around the Trap, Neuter, and Return, TNR, program taking place in the community. It gave a glimpse into the program that is as complicated as the issue of stray cats in the Midland community. Recently, Danielle Piat of Permian Basin Animal Advocates sat down with the Reporter Telegram to discuss TNR, the success it is having in Midland, and the amount of work taking place to make sure money spent now will benefit the community later. The following is a question and answer that came from an interview with Piat. Question: why is trap, neuter, return necessary in Midland? Answer: it is a non-lethal alternative to the trap and kill method of controlling the cat population. Kennel statistics Piat provided show the number of cats and kittens euthanized in Midland jumped from 1,554 in 2018 to 2,210 in 2019. Question. In 2018, the city was petitioned and then allowed the integration of a TNR program into the larger voucher program. What success have we seen with that program? Answer. Cat euthanasia, cats taken in versus those euthanized, has dropped from 57% in 2019 to 48% in 2020. So far this year, the percentage is down to 33%. In terms of total numbers of cats and kittens killed, the numbers are 2,210 in 2019, 1,299 in 2020, and 237 during the first 4 months of 2021. Question. Is there more to the effort to save cats and kittens than TNR? Answer. Yes. For instance, Permian Basin Animal Advocates reported participating in fostering and transporting animals to other areas where there is space available. Piot said last month PBAA had about 16 cats being fostered and 20 dogs. She also estimated the number of cats transported a month to other areas can range from 10 to 42. She estimated her organization's cat adoptions are between 5 and 10 a month. Question. What organizations participate in TNR? A. Not a complete list. Permian Basin Animal Advocates is a 501c3 nonprofit, no-kill organization that works with foster homes in the Permian Basin area to rescue neglected animals from the streets and or kill shelters and get them permanent approved homes. It also reports to educate the community on the fundamentals of responsible pet ownership, TNR, and the importance of spaying and neutering. Midland Cat Wranglers is a 501c3 nonprofit. Its mission and vision are to reduce the overpopulation of unowned cats in the Midland area through a humane solution called Trap, Neuter, Return. It aims to educate the public on the benefits of TNR and provide the resources needed to empower the community to join our efforts. It strives to improve the lives of unowned cats and their relationship with the community. Fix West Texas lists as its mission to make spay-neuter services and other preventative care both affordable and accessible to all pet owners in the West Texas area, thereby reducing local euthanasia and shelter intake rates. Piot stated that the goal is not necessarily to return cats to a community. If they're friendly, we will typically put them in a foster home. If they're friendly, we, of course, adopt them out if we have a foster open, so you will actually see a lot of adoptable cats here with their ears clipped tips. The ears clipped lets people know that the so-called community cat has been taken in before and neutered or spayed. Question. Why is the city's voucher program and the participation of TNR in that program so important in controlling the cat population and saving lives? Answer. Piot said it is not cheap to fix a cat. Surgery prices at some vet's office can cost $110 or more, and that doesn't include the cost of a rabies shot, maybe around $15. The voucher only pays for $70. What Fix West Texas did was create a lower cost and make it a more efficient process, as vets are specifically trained in fast-paced, high-quality spay and neutering. Piot said those organizations working in TNR can use Fix West Texas, which has lowered the cost to $70 for the alteration and $12 for the rabies. That lowers the out-of-pocket to $12, which can be covered easier by donation programs to Permian Basin Animal Advocates, Midland Cat Wranglers, Fix West Texas, or other organizations. Question. What are other issues with TNR? Answer. First, this is a proactive, not a reactive program, Piot said. The goal is to control the cat population. No one can be certain what the population is, but advocates are confident it would be much higher without a TNR program. They are also certain costs would be higher to the city if the program would not be in place because of a greater need to collect cats, house the animals, and ultimately kill them. A larger part of the TNR program is volunteer-driven because of organizations like PBAA and Cat Wranglers. TNR advocates also hope money invested today will reduce costs down the line. Midland Reporter Telegram, July 10th, 2021. Following pandemic, Midland ready to push forward. By Adrian Carrasco, businessman, elected official. The past year and a half has been a trying time, to say the least. COVID disrupted this whole nation and Midland. As a father, I saw my son's senior year spent at home, behind a computer, sometimes well into the night, to complete school homework and projects. His parking spot at Midland Lee left only with the black paint that we started covering the paint from before. I remember him asking me, "Dad, will I be able to walk the stage for graduation?" I looked at him and told him yes, as I knew we would bounce back from the pandemic. He missed his school friends, but he never lost focus on making sure he did his work because graduation was on the horizon. Focus was on the mind of my son and many in Midland. We were accustomed to the highs and lows of the oil economy, but we did not expect a double whammy. I, as many, worried about my oil and gas production company and its survival. I adjusted my company and prepared myself of what was to come. I saw business acquaintances lose their companies, and I went from 150 employees to 60 in 2 weeks. In Midland and West Texas, we are survivors. I saw the community come together to help each other, support each other, and full of faith. During the COVID pandemic, I had a calling to get more involved in my community, and I ran for an elected position on the Midland College Board of Trustees. This election called for creative ways to get my name out there, as knocking on doors and visiting with the citizens face-to-face proved difficult because of social distancing. I was proud of our campaign as I was victorious in winning a position on the board of a jewel in our community that has such a special place in my heart and the Carrasco family. Workforce training has never been so important for Midland College. We learned that during downturns, we must be able to teach those at home or those who are unemployed to explore a new type of career or advanced training. The advantages of having such a great community college here in Midland stand true. The board, administration, and all staff at Midland College will continue to prepare young minds and adults for the future. As I sit in my office looking out to the north at Loop 250, I see more traffic and life. As a commissioner on the city's planning and zoning board, I see an increase of new business, new plan developments, and expansion of businesses coming to Midland. In May, I sat at the State of Midland, which Bobby Burns and the Midland Chamber of Commerce presented as one of their great pillars of programs and saw a sold-out program. With the top leaders of the major taxing entities on stage, they once again assured us that Midland was ready to get back to business and push forward. Midland has so many positive things to look forward to. New and up-and-coming leadership in the community is happening. And we need more of this to give Midlanders what they want and need. Getting involved in our community is so important. There are city boards, committees, and nonprofit boards that need our help and input. Our current city and county leadership need us to support and work with them for the common good of Midland. The new Centennial Park and micro markets have brought a new life to downtown. The joy of seeing families coming together downtown is wonderful. The need to unify as community has never been so important as we continue to bring outdoor life, new economic opportunities, and expansion upon our great oil economy in Midland. I know it is hard to make everyone happy, but we cannot move this community forward without strong leadership, and especially the support of its citizens. Midlanders have always stuck together, and it is our time to push this beautiful city forward together. God bless Midland, and adelante. Move forward.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, July 10th, 2021. COVID Vaccine Clinic. Midland Health offered a walk-in Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine clinic at the F. Marie Hall Outpatient Center, formerly the West Campus, on Friday. Midland Health administered first doses. The next clinic is set for 1 to 4 p.m. July 30th. Odessa Vinyl Brunch and Pop-Up to be monthly event. Odessa Arts, Endless Horizons, and Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center welcome back the Vinyl Brunch this Sunday from 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Endless Horizons will be spinning vinyl records, and you will also have a pop-up shop with vinyl records and record players available for purchase, according to a press release. Attendees can enjoy brunch and mimosas inside Barrel and Derek and listen to beats spun by Endless Horizons. Vinyl Brunch will be held on the second Sunday of each month inside Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. Reservations can be made at Barrel and Derek by calling 580-5805, or patrons can enjoy the tunes in the lobby area. Drilling Rise, Staying Steady by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity continues a slow, steady rise as commodity prices remain healthy. Oilfield services company Baker Hughes and data analytics company Enverus reported Friday the U.S. rig count rose 4 rigs to 479. That's 221 more rigs than the 258 at work nationwide last year, as the rig count was plummeting to a record low, 244, last August. There were 378 rigs drilling for crude, up 2 for the week, and 197 more than the 181 rigs seeking oil last July. There were 101 rigs drilling for natural gas, up 2 for the week, and 26 more than the 75 rigs drilling for natural gas a year ago. Texas added 2 rigs for 224 rigs drilling statewide. That's 117 more than the 107 at work last year. New Mexico reported 75 rigs, unchanged for the week. Louisiana, Ohio, West Virginia, and Wyoming joined Texas as producing states showing gains for the week. Colorado and Pennsylvania each saw slight declines in rig activity. The Permian Basin was unchanged at 237 rigs. A year ago, there were 125 rigs at work in the Permian, 112 fewer than this week. Lee County, New Mexico, continues to be the most active in the Permian, with 47 rigs, unchanged for the week. Midland County followed with 38 rigs, up 1 for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico, saw 27 rigs at work within county lines for a third consecutive week. Reeves County had 26 rigs, down 2. Loving County and Martin County each reported 18 rigs, up 2 for Loving and unchanged for Martin County. Howard County and Upton County each reported 13 rigs, down 1 for Howard and unchanged for Upton County. Irion County saw the return of activity this week with 1 rig at work. Enverus Rig Analytics, which has a different reporting schedule and criteria than Baker Hughes, said the U.S. rig count fell 7 to 536 as of July 7th. The company noted that the dog days of summer are upon us, and historically, that means relatively steady rig counts from July to August. A look at the differences between the July and August averages for the past 7 years yields a mean of 4 rigs. At roughly this time last year, the pandemic had done its worst to rig activity, dropping the total to 264 on July 5th. The current rig count is up 99% year over year, as well as up 3% on the month. Week over week, the most significant changes were in the Permian, with the count dropping by 6 to 222. The Delaware Basin fell 4 to 124. And the Midland Basin dropped 2 to 98. The most active drillers in the Permian are Pioneer Natural Resources, 26 rigs, Mewbourne Oil, 14, Devon Energy, 13, and ConocoPhillips, 12. Compared to a year ago, there are nearly 100 more rigs running in the play. Notably, Devon is actually running 3 fewer Permian rigs than this time last year, while Pioneer is running 14 more. Mewbourne is running 12 more than this time last year, while ExxonMobil is down by 18 rigs in the Permian at 7 presently. Leading the state's production. Railroad Commission says 8 Permian Basin counties produce nearly 54% of state's oil in April. By Stuart Doreen. 8 Permian Basin counties combined to make up nearly 54% of the statewide production of oil in April, according to the preliminary reported totals from the Railroad Commission of Texas. Midland County again led the state with 15.86 million barrels, or 14.28% of the 110.990 million barrels produced in April, according to the RRC. Midland and Martin County were numbers 1 and 2 in the state, accounting for nearly 25% of all oil produced. The RRC reported 11.4 million barrels were produced in Martin County during the month of April. The other Permian Basin counties in the top 10 were Howard, Upton, Reeves, Loving, Reagan, and Ward. They combined for 53.97% of the total production. The RRC reported Karnes was 4th and La Salle was 10th. In terms of natural gas production, 2 Permian Basin counties finished in the top 3 during the month. Reeves again dominated other counties with 83.075 billion cubic feet of natural gas produced. Webb and Midland were the only other counties with more than 50 billion cubic feet. Midland Reporter-Telegram obituaries published Sunday, July 10th. Bobby Wayne Connor. Bobby Wayne Connor, 69, of Lubbock, passed away Tuesday, July 6th, 2021. He was born August 25th, 1951, in Haskell, Texas, to Eugene Lee and Francis Moselle. Hamilton Connor of Rural, Texas, Bobby grew up in Midland and graduated from Midland High in 1969. Bobby is survived by his wife, Patty Connor, sons Matt Connor of Steamboat Springs, Colorado, and Brian Connor of Lubbock, daughter-in-law Anna Sulsters of Sydney, Australia, brother Tommy Connor of Midland, sisters Frances Davis of Lubbock, Mary Nell Vickers, and Nancy Jezik and husband David, all of Midland, grandson August E. Connor of Sydney, Australia, plus nieces, nephews, and other family members. Bobby is preceded in death by his parents and nephew, Billy Bob Robertson. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, July 15th at Venue on Broadway, 2202 Broadway, Lubbock, Texas, 79401. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorial donations to Meals on Wheels, 2304 34th Street, Lubbock, Texas, 79411. Larry Allen Stapp. Larry Allen Stapp passed away peacefully at home on July 6, 2021. He was born on September 14, 1947, to Norman and Evelyn Stapp. On November 21, 1967, he married Frances Newton. He was preceded in death by his parents and his parents-in-law, Lehman and Frances Newton. He is survived by his wife, his daughters, and sons-in-law, Stacy and J.Z. Cornett, and Brandy and Jim Tyree, and his 7 grandchildren. A memorial service will take place at 10 a.m. Monday, July 12th, at First United Methodist Sanctuary in Midland. The family requests that memorials be made to First United Methodist Church of Midland or the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Patsy Bostwick. Patsy Bostwick passed peacefully from this life into eternal life on Monday, July 5th, 2021, in Dallas, Texas, surrounded by her loving family. Patsy, Mimi, was the best wife, mom, sister, grandmother, and great-grandmother who loved her family to the fullest, We will miss her greatly. Patsy was born on November 4, 1938, in Wilmer, Arkansas, to Woodrow and Lucille Colbeth. She was later married to her husband, James E. Bostwick, Jr., in March 1959. Her surviving family includes her son, Craig Bostwick, from Frisco, Texas, daughter, Dana Foley, from Dallas, Texas, plus grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A celebration of life service will be held on Saturday, July 17th at 12 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home Chapel in Midland, Texas. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Midland SPCA. Arrangements are under the direction of Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.ellisfunerals.com. Paul A. Hamels. Paul A. Hamels, 76, of Cheyenne, Wyoming, passed away July 1, 2021, at Davis Hospice Center. He was born April 21, 1945, in Boston, Massachusetts, to Adrianus and Christine Hamels. He married Kathleen Hawkins on September 16, 1967, in Chula Vista, California. He is survived by his wife, Kathleen Hamels of Cheyenne. Children, Laura and Dan Harvick of Cheyenne, Amy and Chris Tharp of Fort Worth, Texas, and Bryce and April Hamels of Anchorage, Alaska, plus many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents. In lieu of flowers, we would like donations to go to the Lone Star Animal Sanctuary in Midland, Texas, www.LoneStarSanctuary.org. Graveside service will be 11:30 a.m. July 10th at Mountain View Memorial Park. Cremation has taken place under the care of Schrader, Aragon, and Jacoby Funeral Home, and condolences may be offered at www.SchraderCares.com. Death notices from Saturday. Annette Scoggins. Annette Scoggins, 61, of Fort Stockton, Texas, passed away on June 25, 2021, at her home in Fort Stockton, Texas. Annette was born on February 19, 1960, to Raymond and Mary Long in Bonham, Texas. She is survived by her spouse, Randall Lee Scoggins, two children, Chauncey Foley and Nicole Long, and one brother. There are no services at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Evangelina Garibay. Evangelina Garibay, 78, of Midland, passed away July 9, 2021. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Sunday, July 11th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, July 12th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Hello, this is Michael reading the Odessa American, published Saturday, July 10th, 2021. Quick hits. Crossroads Summer Nights. Crossroads Church, 6901 East Highway 191, has scheduled summer nights for high school and middle school students. Sundays, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., high school students, 9th through 12th grades. Tuesdays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., middle school students. All students are welcome to join for volleyball, basketball, and other backyard games. Bring a friend. Visit facebook.com/crstudentsodessa. Bridal and Quinceañera Experience. The Bridal and Quinceañera Experience has been scheduled from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. July 18th at the Odessa Hotel and Conference Center, 305 5th Street. The event will include a contest drawing for a weekend stay at the Odessa Marriott, complimentary appetizers, custom mocktails, cash bar, door prizes, live fashion shows, vendors, and scheduled tour times. Tickets are $7. Repairs scheduled across Odessa District. Contractors will be working in July and August in specific locations. Two routine maintenance contracts have been executed to make key repairs at multiple locations across the Odessa District, a Texas Department of Transportation press release stated. The work is reportedly scheduled to take place primarily in July and August. The first contract is scheduled to start the week of July 12th in Ector, Crane, and Winkler counties. Dan Williams' company of Austin won the first contract with a bid of a little more than $1.9 million. The second contract will improve 22 small locations and is scheduled to start the week of July 26th in Pecos, Reeves, and Terrell counties. Reese Albert Incorporated of San Angelo and Midland won the second contract with a bid of a little less than $1.7 million. Some locations may have increased law enforcement presence to improve safety for workers and to help motorists navigate work zones with better efficiency and safety, the press release stated. None of the locations will take more than a few days to complete, weather permitting. The locations for the first contract are Spur 588, Faudry Road, at both Highway 191 service roads in Odessa and Ector County. Both Interstate 20 service roads at Moss Road in Ector County. Highway 329 and the Southwest Truck Route in Crane County. FM 1053 at FM 1233 in Crane County. Highway 115 at FM 1232 and South Stanilin Road in Wink in Winkler County. Work may also be done on various locations on I-20 in Ector County, depending on how much money is left in the contract after specific locations are done. The locations for the second contract are 6 short sections of eastbound I-20 near the city of Pecos in Reeves County, 5 short sections of I-10 and I-20 near where I-20 splits off I-10, 4 short sections of U.S. Highway 90 and U.S. Highway 285 near Sanderson in Terrell County, 2 short sections of I-10 near Bakersfield in Pecos County, 5 short sections near Fort Stockton in Pecos County. They include Highway 18 near the Flying J truck stop, both I-10 service road intersections with Highway 18, the north service road of I-10 at 7D Road, and the Business 10 intersection with 7D Road. Solstice Live. Solstice Live, which is an all-day music event, will take place July 24th in downtown Odessa on 5th Street and Texas Avenue. The event will include live music, food, games, and more. Entertainment will include 1,000 Horses, Shooter Jennings, Matt Castillo, Big Spring, and the Caleb Young Band. The day's events will also include video game trailers, bounce houses, and water events. Children 10 and under get in free. Odessa American Obituary from Saturday, July 10th. Doris Ann White, Odessa. Doris Ann Pittman White, 90 years of Odessa, Texas, passed away peacefully on July 9th, 2021 in Odessa. Doris Ann was born in Anson, Texas on March 25th, 1931, to Maud Hardy Pittman and Ernest Martin Pittman. Doris Ann married Joe Brooks White of Anson, Texas, on September 2, 1948, in Anson. Doris Ann and Joe White owned Joe White Lincoln Mercury in Odessa for 37 years. Doris Ann is preceded in death by, and now eternally reunited with, her husband Joe Brooks White, her parents, Maud and Ernest Pittman, her sister, Norma Jean Pittman, her brother, Ernest Guilford Rod Pittman, and her grandson, Joe Brooks White II. She is survived by her son, David and Pam White of Richmond, Texas, daughters, Leanne and Johnny Walker of Houston, Texas, Lynn and Carrie Geisler of Odessa, Texas, plus many grandchildren and other family members. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Monday, July 12, 2021 at Sunset Funeral Home. Funeral service will be at 1 p.m. Tuesday, July 13, 2021 at the Bridge Church, 3901 East Yukon Road, Odessa, with pastors Donnie Williams and Kelby Davis officiating. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be made to the Bridge Church of Odessa, Texas, CASA of the Permian Basin, or the Rheumatoid Arthritis Foundation. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign her guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices from Saturday, July 10th. Annette Long Scoggins, Fort Stockton. Annette Long Scoggins, 61, of Fort Stockton, died Friday, June 25th in Fort Stockton. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Odessa. Jose de Jesus Carrillo Ramos, Odessa. Jose de Jesus Carrillo Ramos, 84, of Odessa, died Wednesday, July 7th in Odessa. Chapel service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, July 10th at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Deacon Alex Sosa is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Merced G. Garcia Fierro, Odessa. Merced G. Garcia Fierro, 62, died Wednesday, July 7th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Odessa American, July 11th, 2021. New Administrator Looking to Improve Quality by Ruth Campbell. With a background in law and education, Chad Croson has parlayed his skills into becoming Ector County ISD's Director of Planning and School Choice. In his position, Croson has two big buckets, choice schools, formerly known as magnet schools, and helping improve the approach at schools that need extra support. We are always looking to improve the options that we have for our kids. And so, as you probably know, there are thematic elements to those campuses. My role is not to supervise the principal or to really dig into the work that's happening, specifically in classrooms, but more to think broadly about the approach at the campus and to act more as an interested peer with the principals to help them to identify areas of improvement and then to, in small iterations, improve the approach at their schools, Croson said. Then also with choice schools, overseeing the choice application process, the lottery, and interacting with parents who have concerns about those issues. But the larger part of my role is really the planning part. That's the part that's new to our district, and so just in this past year, ECISD became part of the fourth cohort of schools in Texas to be in the System of Great Schools, or SGS, he said. This is a four-year program that is a problem-solving approach for improving campuses with the stated goal of providing high-quality, best-fit schools for every child. We recognize in ECISD that we have some high-performing schools and have other schools that are in need of improvement. And so this plan helps us to, in a very systematic way, go about improving those schools that need improvement. And in concert with our district strategic plan, which has been approved by the Board of Trustees, we think that these two things, the strategic plan and the system of great schools together, can lead to some pretty dramatic improvements in our schools in a relative short period of time, Croson said. Croson arrived at ECISD in July 2020, smack in the middle of the pandemic. He said it made meeting people and learning about the district interesting. You see people in little boxes on the screen. Eventually, they're like real-life people that you get to interact with, and so you get to know them in a different way. But yeah, it was interesting coming here in the middle of that, really the height of the pandemic. Assistant Superintendent of Student and School Support, Alicia Severson, said Croson is a tremendous asset to the team. He has a unique skill set in that he is an educator and former campus administrator who has his law degree. His knowledge and experience play a key role in district strategic plan work in the areas of in-district partnerships and creating new choice options for families. We are very fortunate to have him on our team, Siversen said in a text message. ECISD, he said, is just getting started with the system of great schools process. The first part of it is more about analyzing school performance, and so we just conducted what's known as a quality seats analysis, or QSA. It's more about identifying seats in our schools where there's high quality instruction that's happening. It's a very quantitative approach, Croson said. He added that they are looking for particular seats in schools where instruction is high quality and seats that need to be improved, and identifying where those high quality seats can be replicated. Once we have the QSA, we build from that what's called the annual portfolio plan. It's updated every year, and it's more the action steps that we're going to take to go about improving those schools. Sometimes it's just sort of traditional school improvement activities, principal coaching, teacher coaching, looking at small curricular adjustments, committing more fully to the professional learning community process, things like that, he said. Other times it involves dramatic school actions like partnering with charting organizations, the School Action Fund Grant Program, and RISE campuses. Rapidly Improving School Effectiveness Program, or RISE, is an initiative geared to bolster academic performance. With a focus on strategic staffing and student support, the RISE program identifies specific staff members who can best meet the individual needs of students at participating campuses, and then carries out a series of unique action steps to ensure the students' academic, social, and emotional needs are met, the ECISD website said. The School Action Fund Grant Program campuses are conducting what Croson said is a redesign. The process involves a greater commitment to blend learning and social-emotional learning lessons. I won't say that they're minor changes, they're still significant changes, but not at the same level as partnering with a charter organization or doing the full reconstitution like Bowie and Burnett. So I oversee all of that process. For the charter organizations, I help to draft and negotiate the contracts and performance agreements. For this collection of projects, I wrote the grants, with help from the team, of course, Croson added. He meets with campus leaders, and there are technical advisors, which are outside organizations appointed by the Texas Education Agency, to help to provide resources that the ECISD need because this is new to them. Croson is also working on charter contracts that ECISD developed with the IDA Public Schools. Third Future, which is taking over operations of Ector College Prep Success Academy, and the YMCA for the pre-K 3-year-old program. Now in his 15th year in education, Croson has worked in various capacities, starting off as a teacher, instructional technology coach, assistant principal, and principal. He earned a bachelor's degree from University of Texas at Austin in government, and his master's of education and administration is from Lamar University. His law degree is from the University of Houston. He and his wife, Lynn, have a daughter, Layla. Originally from the Houston area, Croson got into education through Teach for America and taught in Philadelphia. I taught 10th grade geometry at Mariana Bracetti Academy, which was quite the cultural shock. Living in Texas my whole life, I went to UT for bachelor's and then moved to Philly, Croson said. Additionally, for the time he was in middle school, he wanted to be a lawyer. I really went into Teach for America just to take a break before I went to law school, and so when I left Philly, I moved back to Houston, and I enrolled in law school and completed the first 2 years. I was working as an intern at the Harris County DA's office, and during the second summer of my law school career, I went home and told my mom that I wanted to quit because I missed teaching so much, Croson said. His mother wasn't real happy about that. I think she was already telling all of her friends that her first son was going to be a lawyer. She encouraged me to stay, and I was lucky that I was at the University of Houston, and they have a part-time, like a night school for law students, and so I switched to part-time. He applied everywhere he could to be a teacher, and decided to take the first job that was offered to him. Croson said he ended up teaching 8th grade U.S. history at Lomax Junior High in La Porte. I won Teacher of the Year my very first year there, so I was like, wow, this is amazing. Maybe this is right, I'm doing the right thing. Croson also finished law school and decided he could use the skills he had learned as an assistant principal or principal. He sat for the bar exam right before he started applying for assistant principal jobs because that was the only instance he'd have enough time to really study for it. He passed the bar. Superintendent Scott Murray hired Croson for his first principal job at Spring Branch, the district Murray came to ECISD from. Croson said he has the goal one day of becoming a superintendent. He, Murray, is a fantastic mentor. I've learned so much from him. So when I had the opportunity to come to ECISD and work with him again, it was a real no-brainer for me. And so I'm incredibly thankful to be out here, Croson said. There are some choice schools that could be changed, but it's early days. We're still in the process of evaluating the programs, and so I will tell you that we have certain programs that are very highly sought after, that fill to capacity every year. Programs like Milam Fine Arts Academy and Reagan and Hayes are both very popular academic programs, and so I can't see that we would be looking to make wholesale changes to those campuses. But we might want to use some of those things that are working really well there at some of our other campuses. Perhaps we wouldn't necessarily transport the theme from one campus to another, Croson said. The matter of whether to have school choice at the middle school level has been identified as an issue. There are choice options at the elementary and high school levels with George H.W. Bush, New Tech Odessa, OCTECH, and Odessa Collegiate Academy. Odessa High School also has the International Baccalaureate Program. There are different things that you could do, and also in high school. Like, even if you attend a traditional high school, there's a lot of different options. You could be in a dual enrollment program where you're really focused on preparing yourself and getting as many credits as possible for your life after graduation and moving to college. Or you're fully committed to athletics or fine arts or whatever it might be in those really robust programs that existed our traditional high school. But in middle school, there's this sort of vacuum that we have right now where Ector College Prep is the only one that's technically a choice school. And like some of our elementary schools, many of the students who attend Ector College Prep are going there just because it's the nearest school to them. They're not choosing to attend there, and so we'll be looking to expand options in the middle school ranks. And that's something that's step one, Croson added.
Quick hits. Golf tournament benefit. Crossroads Church has scheduled the 12th annual golf tournament for both men and women Tuesday at the Odessa Country Club, 1 Fairway Drive. Shotgun starts at 9 a.m. Sponsorships are available. All proceeds benefit the student summer camp's transportation. To register or for more information, email jennifer@crchurch.cc. Call for entries. Keep Odessa Beautiful is inviting all Permian Basin designers to design your wearable art piece by reducing, reusing, recycling, and participate in the 6th annual Recycle Fashion Show, October 8th. Prizes for adult category has been boosted this year. Adult. First prize is $700, second $500, and third $300. Student first prize is $350, second $250, and third $150. Free to enter. For more information, email kob@odessa.tx.org or visit keepodessabeautiful.org.
Odessa American, July 11th, 2021. Dennis Ray Conley. Odessa, Dennis Ray Conley, age 58 of Odessa, Texas, passed from this life on Friday, July 2nd, 2021. He was born on Tuesday, March 19th, 1963, in Ozark, Arkansas, to Jean and William Conley. Those left to cherish his love and memories are his sons, Tanner Conley and wife Katie, David Conley, daughters Andrea Anderson and Marisha Pondo, and husband, Alex, brothers Russell Conley, Billy Conley, and Robert Conley, sisters Rita, Melissa, and Denise Belt, and husband David, grandchildren Daniel, Lydia, Clara, Scarlett, and Declan, and other family and friends. Visitation will be held Tuesday, July 13th, 2021, 10 to 2 p.m. A memorial service will be held Tuesday, July 13th, 2021 at 2 p.m. at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Online condolences may be sent at acreswestfuneral.com. Lily Rose Meisner Lippe. Sugar Land, Lily Rose Meisner Lippe, a wonderful wife, mother, granny, and great-granny, left the confines of this earth to enter into the mansions of heaven on June 5th, 2021. She died peacefully in her sleep at the age of 94. She was born on September 28, 1926, in Midland, Texas. She is survived by her loving children, Daniel Lippe of Houston, his wife Sharon, granddaughters Caitlin Sanzing, her husband Greg, and great-granddaughters Lily and Violet, Lisa Armstrong, her husband Brian, Charlotte Schumann of Missouri, Texas, her husband Fred, grandsons David Schumann and Jonathan Schumann, Phyllis Hartman of Houston, her husband Mark, grandchildren Nathan Hartman and Sarah, her husband Anar, and her great-grandchildren Aaron, Luke, and Caleb, Byron of Pennsylvania, his wife Darla, grandsons Jesse, his wife A. Zachary, and great-granddaughter Eve. She is also survived by her siblings, numerous nieces and nephews, an extended and loving family. Family visitations and a memorial service will be held in Odessa, Texas, at Emmanuel Lutheran Church, 6450 Texas, 191 Frontage, Odessa, Texas, 79762. Visitation with the family will be held on Friday, July 16th, 2021, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. The memorial service will be at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, July 17th, 2021. In lieu of flowers, donations can be given to the Emmanuel Lutheran Church, the Lutheran Hour, or a charity of your choice. Janice Edward Weems, Lubbock. Janice Edward Weems, age 69, passed away at the University Medical Center in Lubbock, Texas, on Friday, July 2nd, 2021. She was born in Odessa, Texas, on Sunday, September 30th, 1951. She is survived by two children, Dylan and Carly, and grandchildren Nicola and Carl. She is also survived by brother Tommy Edwards and sister-in-law Rita, sister Rita Mills, brother and sister-in-law Cecile and Marilyn, and numerous nieces and nephews. Visitation begins at Acres West at 1 p.m. Friday, July 9th, 2021. The family would love to share memories with friends and loved ones at the funeral home from 6 to 8 p.m. that evening. Funeral services in celebration of Janice's life will be at Acres West Funeral Chapel at 1 p.m. Monday, July 12th, 2021. Condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, July 12th. Leading by example, new Carver principal looks forward to serving youngest learners. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Priscilla Aguilar discovered education while in high school and hasn't looked back. She was a classroom teacher for 13 years, served as an assistant principal, and was recently named principal of Carver Early Education Center. Her most recent assistant principal post was actually two because she split time between Carver and San Jacinto Elementary School. The younger grades have always appealed to her because, quote, they're just not as excited, unquote, and when they understand something, there is that light bulb moment. A native Odessan, Aguilar went to Ross Elementary, Hood Junior High, now Wilson and Young Middle School, and Permian High School. She started her degree path at Odessa College and then went to the University of Texas Permian Basin. Aguilar earned a bachelor's degree in family and child studies and a master's in educational leadership, both from UTPB. Getting into administration, she said, was kind of an accident. Quote, the opportunity came up again when I was at Gonzales Elementary, and the district offered a program to pay. I was already teaching. I was, of course, married and have two daughters. And so I thought, what a great opportunity for them to see that I have a job, a household to maintain, end quote. Aguilar and her husband Jesse have two daughters, Olivia, who will turn 14 in July, and Elizabeth, who just turned 12. She added that she also wanted to be a role model for her daughters to show them that they have choices. Aguilar herself was also supported by her mother, who encouraged her to continue her education. So she decided to go for it. Quote, and then opportunities kept presenting themselves for me to continue on with the positions in ECISD, Aguilar said. As principal of Carver, Aguilar will be replacing Sherry Palmer, who was the school chief for about 10 years. Quote, "We were sitting at the board meeting, and I thought, what did I do? It is a totally different role, and I have really big shoes to fill. Miss Palmer was amazing in the early childhood realm. Just everything from report cards she helped develop to curriculum, and she just knows everything forwards and backwards. But I think it's a great opportunity, because I was really afraid of someone coming in that wasn't dedicated to early childhood," end quote. The teachers also asked her if she was going to apply. Aguilar said she was unsure at first, but she wanted to make sure everyone was at ease with the person that followed Palmer. Quote, "And then it just slowly, 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 it just happened. And it was just, again, another opportunity and another blessing that just came my way," she said. Aguilar is expecting 300 pre-kindergarten children this fall and close to 50 staff members. Because she loved teaching, Aguilar said she feared she would miss the classroom when she became an administrator. Quote, "But being in the classroom as much as we are, I feel like I know the kids just as well. The relationships with parents are still there, so it was something that I had to adjust to. It's a different type of relationship, but it's still a meaningful one," she added. Aguilar plans to keep the programs that Palmer put in place that foster strong relationships with parents and help them advocate for their children successfully. Quote, "My vision for Carver is to keep growing with our parents. A lot of our parents are young, and I think that it's educating them as well as their child. It's not that they don't care. It's not that they don't want to be involved. I think that a lot of our parents don't know how to be involved. They don't know how to help their children at home," Aguilar said. She added that parents go home from parent-teacher meetings with two or three activities that they can do at home to help strengthen their child's learning capacity. The skills can carry parents and students through their entire educational career. Alicia Press, an Ector County ISD Executive Director of Leadership, said Aguilar will be a great addition to the team of ECISD principals. Quote, "She is a strong instructional leader with a heart for Odessa's youngest learners. We are very fortunate to have her leading Carver," Press said in a text message.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.